Teaching Morality, the Kohlberg Chart, an Angels and Superheroes podcast. Today we examine a way to help students develop a sense of morality in their actions. We do this, as we usually do, by examining the mistakes of our own experience as teachers. This Angels and Superheroes podcast is derived from material that is also available at angelsandsuperheroes.com and might also overlap information from our book, Angels and Superheroes, Compassionate Educators in an Era of School Accountability, which is available at our site or from any reputable online or brick-and-mortar bookseller. I knew the lesson wasn't my most riveting work. In fact, I can't even remember what I was teaching that day. But however dry the material, I was still shocked when a student suddenly got up from her chair by the door and quickly walked out of the classroom. "Did she just?" I asked, gesturing toward the door. A couple of students nodded affirmatively. "Do you suppose she knows I saw her?" I joked. This elicited a little laughter, and I took a deep breath before I attempted to resume the lesson. On the surface, I remained calm, but underneath I was experiencing a fierce internal battle. I still had a full class, so I had to keep teaching. But a student had just walked out of class. Out of my class. I wanted to find her and bring her to justice. No, I needed to bring her to justice. Barely a minute after I had resumed teaching, she walked past my door from left to right. Well, that was bold. In between points of my lesson, I quickly, and very publicly, wrote out a Saturday school form with her name in all capital letters, with sharp angles visibly demonstrating the peaks of my frustration and valleys of my despair. I'd barely gathered myself before she walked past again in the other direction. I was going to lose my cool. To be so blatant, to essentially dare me to catch her. Well, I kept teaching, and I got to a natural stopping point in the lesson, with students working quietly at their desks, and I stormed toward the hall, just as she re-entered. Through clenched teeth, I asked, "Where were you? You think you can just walk out?" The next couple of sentences are lost to history, but I'm afraid I may have already gotten to the point of threatening specific consequences and handing her the Saturday school form when she interrupted me. "Mr. Jose, that teacher from down the hall... the really, you know, heavy English teacher?" I knew which denotation of really heavy she was using. She didn't mean prompting deep thoughts, but I was going to address her poor manners later. "Well," the student continued, "she was walking past the door when she spilled her coffee, and then she dropped a pile of papers. I had to go help her." Oh, I had her cornered. I could see through her little story. "Then why'd you go past my door two times?" I held up a pair of fingers to reinforce the multiplicity of her offense. Then, in two syllables, I said, "Twice." "Mr. Jose," she sighed. Frankly, it was a bit patronizing. "Okay, I broke a rule." Ha! Now she was starting to see it my way. I waited for her admission of wrongdoing. When she continued, "Well, Mr. Jose, I went into the boys' room to get some paper towels to help her clean it up. It's so much closer than the girls' room. There wasn't time." Well, now everything had changed. I was in a bit of a quandary. Here was a student who had indeed broken a rule, but who had acted in accordance with perhaps the highest impulses given to us. She had broken a rule to help another person, and a teacher at that. She'd broken a rule to help one of my brethren. I looked down at the puny and ill-intentioned Saturday school form in my hand, and I thought hard about the waste of a triplicate form. And I ripped it in half. "And why didn't you say something as you left?" I asked, feebly looking for one last technicality to get her on. "You were in the middle of a sentence, Mr. Jose. I didn't want to interrupt." Well, it was years later that I encountered Lawrence Kohlberg's theory of moral development. Kohlberg worked from Jean Piaget's framework, suggesting that a child develops cognitively in a predictable pattern. Piaget demonstrated that a child moved from a concrete operational stage to a formal operational stage in pretty predictable steps. In this last stage, a person can understand abstract concepts such as morality and virtue. Kohlberg researched how morality progressed in individuals and found that there was a similar predictable progression. Kohlberg described the stages as demonstrated in the chart below, along a continuum. These are most simply described by the primary motivation that prompts the individual to act. The first two levels, which together he called pre-conventional to suggest they happened before adolescence, were acting to avoid a consequence and acting just to get a fair deal for yourself. In the conventional stages, a person would be seen to act to gain someone's approval or to act in strict accordance with societal, or in our case, classroom rules. Finally, in the post-conventional stages, one might act out of respect for moral rules or to act from an internalized code of what is right or wrong. One implication of these stages is to suggest that a person might be guided by the conventional goal of pleasing others, and in doing so, they might be willing to break a moral law, blind as he is to the other motives of his behavior. Calling these stages suggests that they happen naturally in a particular order over time, with the person eventually arriving at the highest level. However, morality is not simply a function of age. A child cannot necessarily move up the ladder simply with the passage of time. Sadly. Instead, we are called to guide and push each other through these stages of development. At our school, we had a particular responsibility to assist students to progress toward the highest level. We know our goal. In our society, where we value justice, truth, and independence, we want every person to be guided by these post-conventional motives. A society full of people who do the right thing because of an internal belief in doing what is right is an unimaginable utopia. So, how do we push students up the ladder from one step to the next? There are several intentional actions one can take to foster a sense of commitment to the higher motives. For instance, if you want to help students move past level 1 and 2, stages 1 and 2, you can do the following. You can stop providing punishments or threats of punishments to address every undesirable behavior. It's easy to reach for the Saturday school slip for every transgression. Just ask the teacher in this example, me. However, this does not promote a sense of any of the action's impact on others, nor does it provide replacement behaviors. You can start using a wide range of responses to misbehavior, allowing for a written or verbal explanation of every misbehavior. Perspective matters, and it is important to take the child's perspective into consideration. Then make sure that every incident results in reteaching the desired behavior, even if other solutions or consequences are necessary. When you get a student who's at level 2, stages 3 and 4, and you want to move them up into even higher levels of morality, you can stop comparing one student's behavior or grades to another student's. This sort of norm referencing of behavior can serve to mask the true benefits of good behavior. When we all agree to a certain code of behavior, predictable good things happen in the environment. When we all agree not to litter, for instance, our grounds stay clean. When we all agree not to say harmful things to each other, everybody seems to have a better day. We can stop saying someone is good or bad, even when the person isn't present. These terms are nebulous at best and damaging at worst. This language suggests that whatever needs the student was trying to meet are not as important as the rule or norm they broke. In schools, we have students who come from every imaginable set of home expectations. Labeling someone a bad kid based on observed loud behavior in the hall is a tragic and damaging overreach. We can start providing reinforcement for positive behavior and correction of misbehavior by pointing out the social benefits of the desirable behavior. Instead of saying, "Hey, you guys are being good," you could say, "When you guys walk through the hall this quietly, the students who are working in other classrooms can keep concentrating. Thank you." A common technique that one could use is called describe, label, praise, where instead of saying, "Great job," we practice describing what we observed, we give it a title, and then praise it. For instance, "I saw you stop and help someone pick up their papers in the hall. That is very considerate. I sure like going to a school with helpful students like you." The hardest part of the Kohlberg chart is moving people into level 3, stages 5 and 6. Some ways you can do this is start asking questions in the classroom about moral issues and the value of individual rights and freedoms. Discuss important documents in history, Hammurabi's laws, the Constitution, various religious texts, including passages from the Bible, the Quran, the Sutras, and the Talmud. Allow exploration of why societies developed these types of rules for themselves. You can learn more about how to do this in our article on the Socratic Seminar. Another way to move up is to stop allowing questionable behavior to go unchecked or unquestioned. Ask a child who threatens or jokes about immoral behavior to explain the comment and to reflect on who might be affected if they were to act on that thought that they express verbally. Now, the process of moving students up through these moral stages is not in the Common Core. It's not in the expectations of future employees. It's not on the ACT test, and it's not measured in any way that I can determine on the state report card. However, there's no argument that these are the most important lessons we can impart to our students. Spending time in class engaged in these questions does not take away instructional time. Ultimately, it is an investment in the moral growth of students. This is an investment that you will realize pays great dividends over and over again. I want to work in a school and live in a world where students feel empowered to step out of class to help someone without repercussions, where those in authority can determine the right time to act, and where they have the right and the opportunity to take no action at all, to rip up the Saturday school slip. What do you do in your classroom to encourage kindness, cooperation, and moral choices? More examples of how to move students up the moral chart are available at our website at angelsandsuperheroes.com. And if you look for Teaching Morality or Kohlberg, you will come to this post with even more ideas about how you tomorrow can implement this in your classroom. This has been an Angels and Superheroes podcast.